2. "You see, my friend, you'll allow me to call myself your friend, Nisipa," Stepan Trofimovich began hurriedly as soon as the trap started. "You see, j'aime le peuple. C'est indispensable. Mais il me semble que je ne m'avais jamais vu de près. Stasi, cela va sans dire qu'elle est aussi du peuple, mais le vrai peuple. That is, the real ones, who are on the high road. It seems to me they care for nothing but where exactly I am going. But let bygones be bygones. I fancy I am talking at random, but I believe it's from being flustered."
"You don't seem quite well." Sofia Matveyevna watched him keenly, though respectfully.
"No, no, I must only wrap myself up. Besides, there's a fresh wind, very fresh, in fact. But let us forget that. That's not what I really meant to say. Cher et incomparable ami, I feel that I am almost happy, and it's your doing. Happiness is not good for me, for it makes me rush to forgive all my enemies at once."
"Why, that's a very good thing, sir."
"Not always, cher innocente. L'Évangile, voyez-vous, désormais nous prêcherons ensemble, and I will gladly sell your beautiful little books."
"Yes, I feel that that, perhaps, is an idea.
Quelque chose de très nouveau dans ce genre. The peasants are religious, c'est admis, but they don't yet know the gospel. I will expound it to them. By verbal explanation, one might correct their mistakes in that remarkable book, which I am, of course, prepared to treat with the utmost respect. I will be of service even on the high road. I've always been of use. I always told them so. Et à cette chère ingrate. Oh, we will forgive. We will forgive. First of all, we will forgive all and always. We will hope that we too shall be forgiven. Yes, for all. Every one of us have wronged one another. All are guilty."
"That is a very good saying, I think, sir."
"Yes, yes. I feel that I am speaking well. I shall speak to them very well. But what was the chief thing I meant to say? I keep losing the thread and forgetting. Will you allow me to remain with you? I feel that the look in your eyes, and I am surprised, in fact, at your manners. You are simple-hearted, you call me sir, and turn your cup upside down on your saucer, and that horrid lump of sugar. But there's something charming about you, and I see from your features... Oh, don't blush and be afraid of me as a man. Cher et incomparable, pour moi une femme c'est tout. I can't live without a woman, but only at her side. Only at her side. I am awfully muddled, awfully. I can't remember what I meant to say. Oh, blessed is he to whom God always sends a woman, and I fancy, indeed, that I am in a sort of ecstasy. There's a lofty idea in the open road, too. That's what I meant to say. That's it, about the idea. Now I've remembered. But I kept losing it before. And why have they taken us farther? It was nice there, too, but here... Cela devient trop froid. À propos, j'ai en tout 40 roubles, et voilà cet argent. Take it, take it. I can't take care of it. I shall lose it, or it will be taken away from me. I seem to be sleepy. I've a giddiness in my head. Yes, I'm giddy. I'm giddy. I am giddy. Oh, how kind you are. What's that you are wrapping me up in?
You are certainly in a regular fever, and I've covered you with my rug. Only about the money, I'd rather...
Oh, for God's sake! Non parlons plus parce que cela me fait mal. Oh, how kind you are.
He ceased speaking, and with strange suddenness dropped into a feverish, shivery sleep. The road by which they drove the 12 miles was not a smooth one, and their carriage jolted cruelly. Stepan Trofimovitch woke up frequently, quickly raised his head from the little pillow which Sofya Matveyevna had slipped under it, clutched her by the hand, and asked, "Are you here?" as though he were afraid she had left him. He told her, too, that he had dreamed of gaping jaws full of teeth, and that he had very much disliked it. Sofya Matveyevna was in great anxiety about him. They were driven straight up to a large cottage with a frontage of four windows and other rooms in the yard. Stepan Trofimovitch waked up, hurriedly went in, and walked straight into the second room, which was the largest and best in the house. An expression of fussiness came into his sleepy face. He spoke at once to the landlady, a tall, thick-set woman of 40, with very dark hair and a slight moustache, and explained that he required the whole room for himself, and that the door was to be shut, and no one else was to be admitted.
"Parce que nous avons à parler. Oui, j'ai beaucoup à vous dire, cher ami. I'll pay you, I'll pay you," he said with a wave of dismissal to the landlady.
Though he was in a hurry, he seemed to articulate with difficulty. The landlady listened grimly and was silent in token of consent, but there was a feeling of something menacing about her silence. He did not notice this, and hurriedly, he was in a terrible hurry, insisted on her going away and bringing them their dinner as quickly as possible, without a moment's delay. At that point, the moustached woman could contain herself no longer.
"This is not an inn, sir. We don't provide dinners for travellers. We can boil you some crayfish or set the samovar, but we've nothing more. There won't be fresh fish till tomorrow."
But Stepan Trofimovitch waved his hands, repeating with wrathful impatience,
"I'll pay. Only make haste. Make haste."
They settled on fish, soup, and roast fowl. The landlady declared that fowl was not to be procured in the whole village. She agreed, however, to go in search of one, but with the air of doing him an immense favour. As soon as she had gone, Stepan Trofimovitch instantly sat down on the sofa and made Sofya Matveyevna sit down beside him. There were several armchairs as well as a sofa in the room, but they were of a most uninviting appearance. The room was rather a large one, with a corner in which there was a bed partitioned off. It was covered with old and tattered yellow paper, and had horrible lithographs of mythological subjects on the walls. In the corner, facing the door, there was a long row of painted icons and several sets of brass ones. The whole room, with its strangely ill-assorted furniture, was an unattractive mixture of the town element and of peasant traditions. But he did not even glance at it all, nor look out of the window at the vast lake, the edge of which was only 70 feet from the cottage.
"At last we are by ourselves, and we will admit no one. I want to tell you everything, everything, from the very beginning."
Sofya Matveyevna checked him with great uneasiness.
"Are you aware, Stepan Trofimovitch?"
"Comment vous savez déjà mon nom?"
He smiled with delight.
"I heard it this morning from Anisim Ivanovitch when you were talking to him. But I venture to tell you for my part,"
and she whispered hurriedly to him, looking nervously at the closed door for fear anyone should overhear, "that here in this village it was dreadful. That though all the peasants were fishermen, they made their living chiefly by charging travellers every summer whatever they thought fit. The village was not on the high road, but an out-of-the-way one, and people only called there because the steamers stopped there, and that when the steamer did not call, and if the weather was in the least unfavourable it would not, then numbers of travellers would be waiting there for several days, and all the cottages in the village would be occupied. And that was just the villager's opportunity, for they charged 3 times its value for everything. And their landlord here was proud and stuck up, because he was, for these parts, very rich. He had a net which had cost 1,000 roubles. Stepan Trofimovitch looked almost reproachfully at Sofya Matveyevna's extremely excited face, and several times he made a motion to stop her, but she persisted and said all she had to say. She said she had been there before already in the summer, with a very genteel lady from the town, and stayed there too for 2 whole days till the steamer came, and what they had to put up with did not bear thinking of.
"Here, Stepan Trofimovitch, you've been pleased to ask for this room for yourself alone. I only speak to warn you. In the other room there are travellers already, an elderly man and a young man and a lady with children, and by tomorrow, before 2 o'clock, the whole house will be filled up, for since the steamer hasn't been here for 2 days, it will be sure to come tomorrow. So for a room apart and for ordering dinner, and for putting out the other travellers, they'll charge you a price unheard of even in the capital." But he was in distress, in real distress.
"Assez, mon enfant, I beseech you. Nous avons notre argent, et après de bon Dieu, and I am surprised that with the loftiness of your ideas you... Assez, assez. Vous me tourmentez," he articulated hysterically. "We have all our future before us, and you fill me with alarm for the future."
He proceeded at once to unfold his whole story with such haste that at first it was difficult to understand him. It went on for a long time. The soup was served, the fowl was brought in, followed at last by the samovar, and still he talked on. He told it somewhat strangely and hysterically, and indeed he was ill. It was a sudden, extreme effort of his intellectual faculties, which was bound in his overstrained condition, of course. Sofya Matveyevna foresaw it with distress all the time he was talking, to result immediately afterwards in extreme exhaustion. He began his story almost with his childhood, when, with fresh heart, he ran about the meadows. It was an hour before he reached his 2 marriages and his life in Berlin. I dare not laugh, however. It really was for him a matter of the utmost importance, and, to adopt the modern jargon, almost a question of struggling for existence. He saw before him the woman whom he had already elected to share his new life, and was in haste to consecrate her, so to speak. His genius must not be hidden from her. Perhaps he had formed a very exaggerated estimate of Sofya Matveyevna, but he had already chosen her. He could not exist without a woman. He saw clearly from her face that she hardly understood him, and could not grasp even the most essential part.
"Ce n'est rien, nous attendrons."
And meanwhile, she can feel it intuitively.
"My friend, I need nothing but your heart," he exclaimed, interrupting his narrative, "and that sweet, enchanting look with which you are gazing at me now. Oh, don't blush, I've told you already."
The poor woman who had fallen into his hands found much that was obscure, especially when his autobiography almost passed into a complete dissertation on the fact that no one had been ever able to understand Stepan Trofimovitch, and that men of genius are wasted in Russia. It was all so very intellectual, she reported afterwards, dejectedly. She listened in evident misery, rather round-eyed. When Stepan Trofimovitch fell into a humorous vein and threw off witty sarcasms at the expense of our advanced and governing classes, she twice made grievous efforts to laugh in response to his laughter, but the result was worse than tears, so that Stepan Trofimovitch was at last embarrassed by it himself, and attacked the nihilists and modern people with all the greater wrath and zest. At this point he simply alarmed her, and it was not until he began upon the romance of his life that she felt some slight relief, though that too was deceptive. A woman is always a woman, even if she is a nun. She smiled, shook her head, and then blushed crimson, and dropped her eyes, which roused Stepan Trofimovitch to absolute ecstasy and inspiration so much that he began fibbing freely. Varvara Petrovna appeared in his story as an enchanting brunette who had been the rage of Petersburg and many European capitals, and her husband had been struck down on the field of Sevastopol, simply because he had felt unworthy of her love and had yielded her to his rival, that is, Stepan Trofimovitch.
"Don't be shocked, my gentle one, my Christian," he exclaimed to Sofya Matveyevna,
almost believing himself in all that he was telling. It was something so lofty, so subtle, that we never spoke of it to one another all our lives. As the story went on, the cause of this position of affairs appeared to be a blonde lady. If not Darya Pavlovna, I don't know of whom Stepan Trofimovitch could have been thinking. This blonde owed everything to the brunette, and had grown up in her house, being a distant relation. The brunette, observing at last the love of the blonde girl to Stepan Trofimovitch, kept her feelings locked up in her heart. The blonde girl, noticing on her part the love of the brunette to Stepan Trofimovitch, also locked her feelings in her own heart, and all three, pining with mutual magnanimity, kept silent in this way for 20 years, locking their feelings in their hearts. Oh, what a passion that was! What a passion that was! He exclaimed with a stifled sob of genuine ecstasy. I saw the full blooming of her beauty, of the brunette's, that is. I saw daily, with an ache in my heart, how she passed by me as though ashamed she was so fair. Once he had said, ashamed she was so fat. At last he had run away, casting off all this feverish dream of 20 years, 20 ans, and now here he was on the high road. Then, in a sort of delirium, he began explaining to Sofya Matveyevna the significance of their meeting that day. So chance an encounter, and so fateful for all eternity. Sofya Matveyevna got up from the sofa in terrible confusion at last. He had positively made an attempt to drop on his knees before her, which made her cry. It was beginning to get dark. They had been for some hours shut up in the room. No, you'd better let me go into the other room, she faltered, or else there's no knowing what people may think. She tore herself away at last. He let her go, promising her to go to bed at once. As they parted, he complained that he had a bad headache. Sofya Matveyevna had, on entering the cottage, left her bag and things in the first room, meaning to spend the night with the people of the house. But she got no rest. In the night, Stepan Trofimovitch was attacked by a malady with which I and all his friends were so familiar, the summer cholera, which was always the outcome of any nervous strain or moral shock with him. Poor Sofya Matveyevna did not sleep all night. As in waiting on the invalid, she was obliged pretty often to go in and out of the cottage through the landlady's room. The latter, as well as the travellers who were sleeping there, grumbled, and even began swearing when, towards morning, she set about preparing the samovar. Stepan Trofimovitch was half unconscious all through the attack. At times he had a vision of the samovar being set, of someone giving him something to drink, raspberry tea, and putting something warm to his stomach and his chest. But he felt almost every instant that she was here, beside him, that it was she going out and coming in, lifting him off the bed and settling him in it again. Towards 3 o'clock in the morning he began to be easier. He sat up, put his legs out of bed, and thinking of nothing, he fell on the floor at her feet. This was a very different matter from the kneeling of the evening. He simply bowed down at her feet and kissed the hem of her dress. "Don't, sir! I am not worth it," she faltered, trying to get him back onto the bed. "My saviour!" he cried, clasping his hands reverently before her. "Vous êtes noble comme une marquise. I am a wretch. Oh, I've been dishonest all my life." "Calm yourself," Sofya Matveyevna implored him. "It was all lies that I told you this evening, to glorify myself, to make it splendid, from pure wantonness. All, every word. Oh, I am a wretch. I am a wretch." The first attack was succeeded in this way by a second, an attack of hysterical remorse. I have mentioned these attacks already when I described his letters to Varvara Petrovna. He suddenly recalled Lise and their meeting the previous morning. It was so awful. And there must have been some disaster, and I didn't ask, didn't find out. I thought only of myself. Oh, what's the matter with her? Do you know what's the matter with her? He besought Sofia Matveyevna. Then he swore that he would never change, that he would go back to her, that is, Varvara Petrovna. We, that is, he and Sofia Matveyevna, will go to her steps every day when she is getting into her carriage for her morning drive, and we will watch her in secret. Oh, I wish her to smite me on the other cheek. It's a joy to wish it. I shall turn her my other cheek, comme dans votre livre. Only now, for the first time, I understand what is meant by turning the other cheek. I never understood before. The 2 days that followed were among the most terrible in Sofia Matveyevna's life. She remembers them with a shudder to this day. Stepan Trofimovitch became so seriously ill that he could not go on board the steamer, which on this occasion arrived punctually at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. She could not bring herself to leave him alone, so she did not leave for Spasov either. From her account, he was positively delighted at the steamer's going without him. "Well, that's a good thing. That's capital," he muttered in his bed. "I've been afraid all the time that we should go. Here it's so nice, better than anywhere. You won't leave me. Oh, you have not left me." It was by no means so nice here, however. He did not care to hear of her difficulties. His head was full of fancies and nothing else. He looked upon his illness as something transitory, a trifling ailment, and did not think about it at all. He thought of nothing but how they would go and sell these books. He asked her to read him the gospel. "I haven't read it for a long time, in the original. Someone may ask me about it, and I shall make a mistake. I ought to prepare myself, after all." She sat down beside him and opened the book. "You read beautifully," he interrupted her after the first line. "I see. I see I was not mistaken," he added obscurely but ecstatically. He was, in fact, in a continual state of enthusiasm. She read the Sermon on the Mount. "Assez, assez, mon enfant, enough. Don't you think that that is enough?" And he closed his eyes helplessly. He was very weak, but had not yet lost consciousness. Sofia Matveyevna was getting up, thinking that he wanted to sleep, but he stopped her. "My friend, I've been telling lies all my life. Even when I told the truth, I never spoke for the sake of the truth, but always for my own sake. I knew it before, but I only see it now. Oh, where are those friends whom I have insulted with my friendship all my life? And all, savez-vous? Perhaps I am telling lies now. No doubt I am telling lies now. The worst of it is that I believe myself when I am lying. The hardest thing in life is to live without telling lies and without believing in one's lies. Yes, yes, that's just it. But wait a bit. That can all come afterwards. We'll be together. Together," he added enthusiastically. "Stepan Trofimovitch," Sofia Matveyevna asked timidly, "hadn't I better send to the town for the doctor?" He was tremendously taken aback. "What for? Est-ce que je suis si malade? Mais rien de sérieux. What need have we of outsiders? They may find besides. And what will happen then? No, no, no outsiders. And we'll be together. Do you know," he said after a pause, "read me something more. Just the first thing you come across." Sofia Matveyevna opened the Testament and began reading. "Wherever it opens, wherever it happens to open," he repeated. "And unto the angel of the Church of the Laodiceans." "What's that? What is it? Where is that from?"
"It's from the Revelation."
"Oh, je m'en souviens.
Oui, l'apocalypse. Lisez, lisez. I am trying our future fortunes by the book. I want to know what has turned up. Read on from there.
And unto the angel of the church of the Laodiceans write, These things saith the Amen, the faithful and true witness, the beginning of the creation of God. I know thy works, that thou art neither cold nor hot. I would thou wert cold or hot. So then, because thou art lukewarm, and neither cold nor hot, I will spew thee out of my mouth. Because thou sayest, I am rich, and increased with goods, and have need of nothing, and thou knowest not that thou art wretched, and miserable, and poor, and blind, and naked.
That too! And that's in your book too, he exclaimed, with flashing eyes, and raising his head from the pillow. I never knew that grand passage.
You hear, better be cold. Better be cold than lukewarm, than only lukewarm.
Oh, I'll prove it. Only don't leave me. Don't leave me alone. We'll prove it. We'll prove it.
I won't leave you, Stepan Trofimovitch. I'll never leave you. She took his hand, pressed it in both of hers, and laid it against her heart, looking at him with tears in her eyes. I felt very sorry for him at that moment, she said, describing it afterwards. His lips twitched convulsively. But Stepan Trofimovitch, what are we going to do, though? Oughtn't we to let some of your friends know, or perhaps your relations? But at that he was so dismayed that she was very sorry that she had spoken of it again. Trembling and shaking, he besought her to fetch no one, not to do anything. He kept insisting,
No one, no one. We'll be alone, by ourselves, alone. Nous partirons ensemble.
Another difficulty was that the people of the house, too, began to be uneasy. They grumbled and kept pestering Sofya Matveyevna. She paid them and managed to let them see her money. This softened them for the time, but the man insisted on seeing Stepan Trofimovitch's papers. The invalid pointed with a supercilious smile to his little bag. Sofya Matveyevna found in it the certificate of his having resigned his post at the university, or something of that kind, which had served him as a passport all his life. The man persisted and said that he must be taken somewhere, because their house wasn't a hospital, and if he were to die there might be a bother. We should have no end of trouble. Sofya Matveyevna tried to speak to him of the doctor, but it appeared that sending to the town would cost so much that she had to give up all idea of the doctor. She returned in distress to her invalid. Stepan Trofimovitch was getting weaker and weaker.
Now read me another passage. About the pigs, he said suddenly.
What? Asked Sofya Matveyevna, very much alarmed.
About the pigs. That's there, too. C'est cochon. I remember the devils entered into swine, and they all were drowned. You must read me that. I'll tell you why afterwards. I want to remember it word for word. I want it word for word.
Sofya Matveyevna knew the gospel well, and at once found the passage in St. Luke, which I have chosen as the motto of my record. I quote it here again. And there was there one herd of many swine, feeding on the mountain, and they besought him that he would suffer them to enter into them, and he suffered them. Then went the devils out of the man and entered into the swine, and the herd ran violently down a steep place into the lake and were choked. When they that fed them saw what was done, they fled, and went and told it in the city and in the country. Then they went out to see what was done, and came to Jesus, and found the man out of whom the devils were departed, sitting at the feet of Jesus, clothed, and in his right mind. And they were afraid.
My friend, said Stepan Trofimovitch, in great excitement, savez-vous? That wonderful and extraordinary passage has been a stumbling block to me all my life, dans ce livre, so much so that I remembered those verses from childhood. Now an idea has occurred to me. Une comparaison. A great number of ideas keep coming into my mind now. You see, that's exactly like our Russia. Those devils that come out of the sick man and enter into the swine, they are all the sores, all the foul contagions, all the impurities, all the devils, great and small, that have multiplied in that great invalid, our beloved Russia, in the course of ages and ages. Oui, cette Russie que jamais toujours. But a great idea and a great will encompass it from on high, as with that lunatic possessed of devils. And all those devils will come forth, all the impurity, all the rottenness that was putrefying on the surface. And they will beg of themselves to enter into swine. And indeed, maybe they have entered into them already. They are we and those, and Petrusha, and les autres avec lui, and I, perhaps, at the head of them. And we shall cast ourselves down, possessed and raving from the rocks into the sea, and we shall all be drowned. And a good thing, too, for that is all we are fit for. But the sick man will be healed, and will sit at the feet of Jesus, and all will look upon him with astonishment. My dear, vous comprendez après, but now it excites me very much. Vous comprendez après. Nous comprendons ensemble.
He sank into delirium, and at last lost consciousness. So it went on all the following day. Sofia Matveyevna sat beside him, crying. She scarcely slept at all for 3 nights, and avoided seeing the people of the house, who were, she felt, beginning to take some steps. Deliverance only came on the 3rd day. In the morning, Stepan Trofimovitch returned to consciousness, recognized her, and held out his hand to her. She crossed herself hopefully. He wanted to look out of the window.
"Tiens, un lac," he said. "Good heavens, I had not seen it before."
At that moment, there was the rumble of a carriage at the cottage door, and a great hubbub in the house followed.